And to say the contrary and to associate, as the Gospels are unanimous in saying that Jesus did, not conspicuously with the righteous, but with prostitutes, tax gatherers, which doesn't sound so bad, but when you realize that the way the Roman tax system worked was a tax collector was given an amount he had to come up with, and his pay was whatever more than that he could exact, you can see why associating with tax collectors got you in a pretty bad odor in the Judea of Jesus' day. And sinners of all stripes. The point is, as I take it, they're valuable too. Everybody's valuable. It's true that people tend, unsurprisingly, I suppose, to interpret Jesus in terms of their own most deeply held convictions. You can, if you go to Monticello in Virginia, buy Jefferson's Bible, which has all the miracles taken out and presents Jesus as a person, rather surprisingly, just like Thomas Jefferson, concerned with equality and so forth. You can read the books of current scholar Dominic Crossan and the Jesus Project and find out, holy crow, that Jesus is very much like a liberation theologian, mostly interested in improving the social condition of the poor. You can read Jesus as interpreted by some Protestant groups and say, well, he's a person really concerned about righteous and very much against sex and gambling and drinking and all sorts of misbehavior of that kind. People do tend to see Jesus in their ideal vision of themselves or their ideal vision of themselves in Jesus. But this commitment to universality and to charity, to universal goodwill, I think, is a touchstone in all interpretations. That ethic of universal benevolence, I think, is one of the central bequests of Christian tradition to the Western tradition as a whole, in all contexts, secular and religious alike. Another manifestation of that. Lifespans for Christians in the Roman Empire, especially among the poor, a group among whom Christians did disproportionately well in the early centuries of the church, lifespans among the poor were much longer among Christians than among others, precisely because of this ethic in action. Because one of the things that Christians felt morally impelled to do was to take care of the sick, in the first instance their own, but ultimately anyone who was sick. That attitude, again, that anyone in need deserves our attention, is, though not wholly unparalleled elsewhere, in very large part a bequest of the Christian tradition we've spoken of in this lecture. Next lecture, we're going to talk about St. Paul, Paul of Tarsus, who many people consider an, if not a co-founder of Christianity, something close to it, certainly a reconceptualizer of Christianity. And also we're going to take a look at the Gospel of John, which in many ways is quite different from the other three Gospels, the so-called synoptic Gospels, meaning that with one eye you can look at a series of parallel passages in them, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John.
After listening to Lecture 12, a student posed this question to Professor Schutt. Is there a parallel between Jesus and Plato? Let's listen to the professor's response.
Well, that's been noted by a good many people. There does seem to be a parallel between their lives and a certain parallel, too, between their teachings. I don't know that Socrates really teaches anything quite like universal benevolence or charity, but he does, unambiguously and clearly teach a commitment to virtue, and that a life devoted to virtue and to understanding and to coming to the fullest possible understanding so that virtue is possible and flows all but necessarily from it, that's central to Socrates' vision. And, of course, there's the similarity, too, that in their lives, despite the benevolence of their intentions and ultimately their messages, they ran into trouble with the authorities and wound up executed, becoming martyrs.
This ends Lecture 12.